Around the NFL Podcast. Has no fear of Miko Grimes.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast, presented by New Era. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler and Colleen Wolf. What's
Yay!
Up, people?
What's happening?
You know, it only struck me.
Why are you laughing?
Because only at this moment did I notice in our wonderful partnership with the people at New Era that the hats. It's actually now almost a situation where we have so many beautiful hats that I couldn't keep my eyes off them as I was looking for you guys to introduce you.
And visors, too.
And, you know, we like to take notes. I have notes essentially just all stuck on my laptop. Now, I used to spread them about
yeah,
but
no
these
longer.
Colorful, beautiful hats have taken over.
So. And you could see this for yourself. This is our Wednesday video show, which airs or goes live at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 Pacific. In Tokyo, for instance, what time, Colleen?
Could be any time.
Yeah,
really.
Figure it out.
2:30.
What do you want? Like, we're the time ombudsman or something. You know, do a web search. Figure it out.
Yeah. Or the universal time. Why don't we use that? Right?
I'm not getting involved.
Okay.
Not getting involved.
All right,
but the full show is up. Well, you can find it out at NFL.com/ATN video. And you could also find all of the last four or five shows we've done on first on Tuesday and now Wednesday are all there, I believe, archived. Is that correct, Erica Tamposi?
We got a thumbs
right.
up.
You're right.
Yeah, that's good. All right, coming up today, guys, our training camp spotlight series rolls on. Very exciting. We're going to talk about two games coming up on NFL Network Airwaves, including Jay Cutler's debut, the Chargers. They're trying to establish a foothold in Los Angeles, and they had a unique promotion that involved free tattoos. Connie Fox had boots on the ground, as did her husband. So we're going to check in with the loving couple about what the scene was in West Hollywood for that little promotion. And also, of course, episode 2 of our favorite NFL program, Hard Knocks.
It was so good.
Another great episode, of course, centering on poor Robbie Aguayo, as you would expect. So we'll get to that as well. Before we do any of that, formally say hello to Erica behind the glass. How are you?
Hey, guys.
Comfort level raising, let's say.
Yeah, feeling pretty good.
1 to 10, where are you at comfort level?
9.
Cool.
Knocked
she looks
out of the park.
Very comfortable.
Yeah,
like, I feel like she's already at 10.
Thank you.
I went home on the listen to the last episode from a technical angle. Mm-hmm. Pumped it out on Loud Sound and within my noise late at night. And it was she did a great job with it. Very technically sound.
Very nice. Erica, what is your Twitter handle, by the way, if the fans want to reach out to you?
At Tamposi NFL.
Yes, and that's where you'll learn the terrible news that Erica is another Patriots fan.
I am, but I had people tweeting at me saying, like, yes, we got to take Dan down. And I was like, hey, I have to stay Switzerland throughout this.
Okay, I respect that. You're a professional. Taking Dan down when his team is predicted by many experts to go 0-16. How low can you go?
It feels aggressive.
Feels aggressive. All right, let's do some news.
Hey, is that too much? How about that one? Is this too much?
Gerald McCoy garnering serious Hard Knocks MVP consideration off his performance in episode 2. We'll get to all that, but let's start first with what is becoming the big legal news story of the NFL season. Of course, we finally got out of Deflategate and Tom Brady. Now we got something else cooking here. It's Ezekiel Elliott, the Dallas Cowboys running back, who was suspended 6 games last week for violating the league's personal conduct policy. Well, Elliott did the expected. He officially filed his notice of appeal of that suspension, the NFLPA announced on Tuesday. Commissioner Roger Goodell has appointed Harold Henderson to hear Elliott's suspension appeal, the league announced Wednesday. And, Mark, is that a familiar name to you, yes or no?
Yes, it is.
It is, because Henderson has been the NFL's appeals officer for years, almost a decade, in fact, and he heard Greg Hardy's domestic violence case way back in 2015. So the hearing has been scheduled for August 29th. Rap Sheet and Tom Pelissero report of NFL Network. We don't know how it's going to play out, but this is becoming a situation now where the Cowboys, or at least Elliott, are fighting this thing.
Well, it feels like the next sort of checkpoint in a process that could take a very long time, bringing into question, you know, what it means for this season for Ezekiel Elliott. Because already, and this is through official statements on Twitter, the NFL and the NFLPA have come at each other very hard. And it kind of reminds you of the tenor and a couple things that have bubbled up since, but the tenor of the lockout back in the day, how openly contentious the two sides were with each other. They are both, you know, there is no meek behavior here. Both have made it very clear they don't agree that the other side has operated, you know, comprehensively in terms of this investigation.
Yeah, the line has been drawn and it's already gotten ugly, and he filed the appeal yesterday. So I can only see this kind of getting even more messy as this progresses. But as you mentioned, Harold Henderson, he did oversee the Hardy case, and that was reduced from 10 to 4 games. He also oversaw the Adrian Peterson appeal, which that was upheld. So it's tough to say how it's going to play out, but the NFL does hire him a lot for these appeals cases, so you would think that it would be a mild reduction, if any reduction.
Yeah, the ground has shifted repeatedly ever since Ray Rice and everything that has come since that. Back in the Greg Hardy days, the first-time offender in a domestic violence incident was 2 games. He got hit with 10 games and then it was dropped to 4. Now under the new rule, 6 games is like the mandate floor level, which is what Elliott got. So you wonder if there will be any change this time around. We don't know. We're not lawyers or plugged in that level. But I would be very surprised if this was struck down anything beyond below 4 games. I feel like the Cowboys and Elliott would be very lucky.
Yeah, I mean, from that angle, it's sort of another precedent-setting case, because we're going to find out how, in this world of 6-game bans attached to this type of incident, if it can shift at all. We'll find out. As you said, we're not lawyers. I would say of the three of you, I'm the least lawyerly. I know nothing about the trade at all.
Didn't you work in a law? No, that was Wes.
Yeah, it was definitely not me.
You did not.
I've worked for lawyers in other capacities. Yeah. They're not fun to work with.
It is interesting that you mentioned that, because the natural progression of this would be Ezekiel Elliott then filing a lawsuit. So it kind of...
Yeah,
and
we saw with
that
Brady,
direction.
Yeah, with the Brady thing, that can take an extremely long time. We might be talking about this all season.
I was just about to say, doesn't this feel like just the beginning of what's going to
we
be
need a lawyer
drawn-out saga?
To come on the show. We need like a friendly lawyer to break everything down for
in
us.
More ways than one, yeah.
You need a lot of lawyers.
Like a cool lawyer.
Yeah.
Like a cool dad lawyer.
Yeah.
Or mom lawyer, okay? Dan?
Yeah. You can get a mom lawyer. Don't get on my case there.
Good point by Colleen.
Everybody's calm down.
I mean, they also don't have to be parents.
Cool dad lawyer. Okay, cool mom lawyer even. Somebody that's aware of the laws, but also can cut loose.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Might need, you know,
have a little
to
fun.
Get more detail, to hash out the scenario, maybe happy hour scenarios after the podcast to really break down what's happening.
Charging
to help us.
To the firm. Of
sure.
Course.
Of course.
Yeah, that's a write-off.
To the
anyway.
Firm.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on. Don't know where that went. The Saints got some bad news on Delvin Bro. The cornerback will undergo surgery for a fractured fibula and is expected to miss the next 6 weeks, Sean Payton announced Wednesday. Rap Sheet reported that the fracture was discovered when an independent doctor read Bro's x-ray. I'm saying that right?
It's not Bro, yeah.
Good. It's Bro.
No, it's not
French.
It's Bro.
So it's like... Bro, your x-ray.
I spell it bro whenever I write my notes.
B-R-E-A-U-X. I like that. Anyway, independent doctor found the break. And that is kind of the other element of the story, is that the Saints had some in-house orthopedists who gave the wrong diagnosis, calling it a contusion. He was not getting better. That's when the independent guy came in. And guess what? Orthopedist sent packing, the old boot. They got a guyode in a big spot.
Two of them.
Yeah, a pair of them. Tells me one was clearly at fault. Well, I'm just speculating. But that the other said, I'm not going to let you go down alone. I'm loyal to you. We're going to go down as a duo. Or they were equally, you know, at fault. We don't know
Well, yeah, obviously. I mean,
I'm just saying it would be a great story if one of them said, I actually had nothing to do with this, but I believe so much in you that I'm going to go right down with you. That kind of loyalty is rare.
Workshopping like a screenplay right now?
Yeah, it feels like, you know, there's got to be another part to this.
And the fact that it was a break, it was initially diagnosed as a bruise, and they were annoyed that he wasn't progressing as quickly as he should have been. And meanwhile, he had a broken leg, and now he needs surgery. He'll be out 4 to 6 weeks. But he has a history of lingering injuries. And so I think that that's sort of what they thought this was. Now, I can kind of relate because when I was younger, mm-hmm. I broke my foot and my mom thought I was exaggerating a little bit. And she made me walk around on a broken foot for 2 days.
Oh, geez.
Well, you can't fire your mom, but that feels like a fireable offense on some level.
You're lucky the state didn't show you.
I had crutches. The doctor was like, actually, your bone is shattered. So
shattered.
I shattered a bone, and she was like, "Toughen up a little bit."
Wow, classic.
My mom.
We've met your mom, and I could see your mom saying, "You know,
a little bit of an edge."
Please, Colleen, I'm not taking to the doctor for this minor injury.
It's true.
You're lucky they didn't like send you to an orphanage after that X-ray.
I'm lucky. Yeah, we're all lucky.
Local orphan's foot is all banged up.
That's
moving
the headline.
On. That's a weird headline.
It is.
That's the headline. Moving on, let's talk about the Arizona Cardinals, who, it's funny how things change in the NFL, folks. A year ago, people were salivating over the potential of a wide receiver group that had, yes, Larry Fitzgerald, but also John Brown, Michael Floyd, Jerron Brown. Oh, so many options, right? Did I miss anybody? J.J. Nelson? I don't know.
There were others, but you hit the big characters.
Yeah.
Anyway, that didn't pan out. Floyd was a mess and eventually got traded. John Brown was banged up. Larry Fitzgerald was still Larry Fitz, but couldn't carry the show alone. And now Bruce Arians is keeping it real. He's not happy with where his wide receivers are at this summer. And on Monday, he didn't hold back. He had this to say via the team's official website. I must have been seeing things back in the spring when I said we had 12 guys who could play in the NFL, referring to his wide receiver group. We might have two. Let's go over the group. Like I said, Fitz, Jerron's still there, John Brown's still there, J.J. Nelson, Britton Golden, Aaron Dobson, Jeremy Ross, Chad Williams. Somebody's going to have to step up and make some plays, Colleen.
Yeah, and I think one of the most interesting things that Bruce Arians said was he was talking about John Brown's injury, and he said, yeah, it's a concern. He's not available. You're only good when you're available. And it was almost that he intimated John Brown was okay to practice, but he just wasn't capable of doing it. And John Brown came out and said, look, I'm not okay to go out there and practice, and my body is different than other players' bodies. And I feel like this is sort of just a message from Arians trying to give a kick to the wide receivers to get their job done. They're missing assignments. They're not catching the ball. But Arians, from the get-go of training camp, has said that he wants really aggressive practices, and he's not seeing what he wants to see out there.
John Brown is the key here. If he, you know, the sickle cell trait situation caused a lot of issues for him. He had other issues last year as well. And if he can play for you this season, I don't think their wide receiver group is in that much trouble, to be honest. They have a fine trio in that. And that's it. Jerron Brown was not in a good connection with Carson Palmer during that first preseason game. I don't put a lot of stock in that. Palmer came out and said that Jerron Brown's someone that could catch 70 or 80 balls this year. And that, to me, points to he may need to be our number two guy, because we don't know what we're going to get from John Brown come week one and maybe deep into the season.
Yeah, Brown, it's easy to forget now, but when Brown is right, he's like an all-pro type talent potentially. So I think Arians is maybe motivated because he knows it. And Arians, more than anything, knows Larry Fitzgerald is as productive as he was last year. He was starting to look like a 30-something wide receiver in terms of his playmaking ability. The offense needs a playmaker to step up. So
one, Tyron Mathieu had a good comment today. He said they're not going up against scrubs. Their defensive backfield, brings some challenges to a group of wide receivers too. That it's like maybe that's part of what we're seeing in practice is struggling with the defense.
And they're dealing with a ton of injuries too. I mean, these guys have shin splints and groin.
Toughen up.
And like a lot of
what would your mom say?
Get out there and play.
So
your mom would be like, "Go run the Boston Marathon." Jeez, Miss Wolf.
I know.
What if? All right. By the way, what if we had cool dad lawyer and cool mom lawyer together, not actually married,
okay,
but just like find a good match of a team, and then we have a little booth that we put right next to Mark about 4 feet away. We just throw it to them every once in a while.
Like that.
Yeah, that could work.
They're like in a soundproof type of booth inside the pod studio, or they're just in their own little area.
You're going to put them in a case?
How about like a cage?
That's weird.
I like that.
Now it's getting weird. Now it's getting weird. Moving on, let's talk about, we were just talking about it with Erica and all her little Patriots friends saying, oh, stick it to Dan. This is a way to really take him down a notch. You know, these Jets fans have been flying too high the last couple of years. But no, that's not the case. It's terrible. being a Jets fan right now. And it is funny to me that Bill Belichick, the coach of the Patriots, famously was the coach of the Jets for one day before he resigned and took the patch job eventually. Despite that, and despite all the success that Bill has had in the years since, in the 17 years since, he still harbors a very, very big grudge against the New York Jets. I'm sure Spygate has something to do with it. Probably
a bit.
A big deal with it. But hey, listen. Hey.
Rex Ryan did no favors there.
Rex did some things. Mangini got on his radar. But he is not – it's very clear that Bill still has a lot of issues with the Jets. And it came up today again on Wednesday when Bill Belichick was discussing his long relationships with Texans assistant head coach Romeo Crennel. Here's what he had to say. Well, Romeo and I started together at the Giants and special teams. So he and I coached special teams together, and then we coached defensively together through 1990. We worked at the Patriots together, then another team, and then back with the Patriots in 2001.
Another team.
He won't even bring the Jets up by name, and he knows that everyone's picking up on that. What is his problem?
I think you should take, as a Jets fan, some calculated pride in this, because if the Jets and the Jets have posed no on-field threat to the Patriots outside of a Mark Sanchez season here and there. I know you cling to that 2010 playoff.
Well, I cling to playoff victories of my teams in the past.
No, I'm not. Let's calm down.
Okay, I do the same.
Don't start getting on each other. We can't get on each other. Both our teams are terrible. Yeah. I'm saying, if he's really so peeved by the Jets and they're so deeply under his skin that he can't refer to them by name, I like that dynamic.
Yeah, that's true.
Thanks, Mark. I have a solution. I think that you should not refer to Bill Belichick by name from this point forward.
I like that.
It's something I'm going to think about for sure. And just so you know, this has been a troll job that's been going on for a while. I think it was last season or maybe the season before. He did a press conference where I don't know how it came up with Belichick, because everybody gets enamored by sometimes Bill goes down these wormholes in his
Friday morning.
If you just pay attention when Bill gets warmed up, you can learn a lot about the game. Calm down. But he, at one point in a press conference in 2015, named every coordinator he had ever had, and he left off one coordinator. Who do you think it was? Eric Mangini.
Mangini.
Yeah.
People forget that Romeo Crennel, when he left the Patriots way, went to Cleveland in the year 2000. He was their defensive coordinator, one of the worst defenses of all time. They were so bad that he had to run a scheme called the UFO defense, where the front seven, all they did was before the snap, they would run around in circles to try to create some sort of confusion. It usually just results in like a 27-yard gain by the opponent.
Not an effective defense.
He tried, though. Creativity points.
I like
points.
The name of it.
And last note, Colleen, I want to thank you. And if you're watching the video show, Colleen literally wearing Jets green and white today.
This was not planned at all. And you know what?
Would you like to wear the Jets hat too?
It's not. It's a little. No, you're right. It's pretty close.
Let me take a picture for the people. Okay. I will send this out.
I should have worn this because I didn't do my hair today.
First on-air photo being taken here in the podcast studio.
All right. Let's move on.
Put
good job, Colleen.
I'm going to put it right on your notes.
There is an alternate reality where it's even more depressing than being an Eagles fan for you. Keep that in mind. That photo represents
that. I like to view it as Jets green and Patriots white.
Wow.
Wow. All
right. Now, moving on. The Chargers. They are trying to establish a foothold, as I said earlier, in this region, Los Angeles, where we live and work. And one of their outreach ideas was to, hey, what if for one day, for 12 hours, we pick a famed West Hollywood tattoo studio and offer free Chargers tattoos to anyone that wants it. Just come to the Shamrock Social Club and get a tattoo. And now it's time. Colleen, you were there.
I was there.
You were there on hand. And the reason you were being a total Miko Grimes scenario.
I was.
Super supportive of your man because I have him on the line right now. His name is John Gonzalez. He is a contributor to The Ringer and also the husbandman of Colleen Wolf. I feel like that's a pretty good description of who you are, John.
It's not bad. For those who don't know, I'm an American sports writer, and I live in Los Angeles with my wife and our two dogs.
It's all there. It's all there if you ever need to know about Gonzo. So, Gonzo, you and Colleen both went to the tattoo shop, and a great piece on The Ringer that you should all check out. Gonzo, I'm sure that you tweeted it out. You could follow Gonzo, underscore John Gonz. Tell us your takeaways from your trip there. How long were you there, by the way?
I was there for a few hours. It was sort of multi-purpose. One, to get a story, but also Colleen was getting her nails done, so I had a way to pick her up.
That's true. I left the tattoo place and was like, what can I do around here? And there's a place that gives free alcohol away, and you can get a manicure at the same
time.
This
is right up on Sunset Boulevard, if I'm not correct.
Is everything on Sunset free now? Like, what's going on in this mystical Southland Boulevard? So that's smart. Very efficient use of your time, Gonzo, in another way. To earn a buck, you just while waiting, you just knock out a column. Nice work.
I knocked out the story, and then Colleen took the money for her nails. It worked out for everybody.
That's great.
So basically, it did seem that you came across some interesting characters here, and one that stuck out was, and I think it was the first fan that you put in your article, was the guy that was such a big Chargers fan down in San Diego that he cried by himself in his car when the news was official that they were leaving San Diego. And yet he got up at like 5 a.m. yesterday to take the ride up Route 5, Interstate 5, with his wife and babies and everything to get this tattoo for the L.A. Chargers. How do you make sense of that, Gonzo?
I don't. I wasn't sure anybody was going to show up. Because you guys obviously saw the Chargers preseason opener in Carson, California. They play in a soccer stadium and couldn't fill it. So right. I was wondering if anybody was going to show to get permanently branded with Chargers tattoos, which seemed kind of crazy. But this guy who was devastated when they moved, decided that he was going to get up and not only drive to LA from San Diego yesterday morning, but he packed his wife and two kids in the car, and one of the kids is 2 weeks old.
Wow.
That's outrageous.
Wow, you shouldn't even be out in the atmosphere when you're that young.
Exactly. Wait. Yeah, not hermetically sealed or anything. And you know what? An angel was quiet as could be.
No, that's sweet. How many people did you see there or get tattoos during your time waiting for Colleen's nails to be completed?
Also, the tattoos themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, the tattoos themselves were interesting. There were three options. But I would say when we got there, when Colleen and I got there, I counted 12 people, 14 if you count the two kids. They didn't get tattoos. and then, although, you know, who knows?
Speaking of orphanage, there would definitely be some social service.
That's true.
Taking away that two-week-old.
Agreed.
Yeah, go ahead, Gonzo.
That all the way around. I think, like, just having a Chargers tattoo as a dad might get you in trouble with child services. But there was probably, like, 20 more people in line when I left, and the PR people told me afterwards that they had somewhere in the neighborhood of, because they were open from 1 p.m. to 1 a.m. yesterday, so they claimed that there were about 100 people in total that showed, but, you know, I didn't see that. I saw about 20.
Well, one question for you. I don't know if you were able to mine your way into the shop itself. By the way, I believe I have one tattoo, and it was something I acquired on West Hollywood, right where I believe this place is, unless this is a newer version. But so you mined your way into this shop. Were you able to see where on people's bodies, be it male or female, are people deciding to get Chargers tattoos? Where was the hot spot on the body, or maybe an unusual placement if you saw one?
So this is interesting. The first guy that I mentioned, Anthony, who brought his two kids and his wife, he got it on his forearm, and the tattoo, you had three options. You had the Chargers lightning bolt, you had the word Chargers, and then you had this weird mock-up deal.
This is my favorite one, this third one.
It's a shield, like a coat of arms, and on it said L.A. Chargers, and then it had like the lightning bolt in blue and gold, and then this is the part that threw me, and I had to ask about it.
God's all fired up.
It looked to me to be some sort of horse, but they insisted it was a stallion.
Behind the glass, I'm being told, Gonzo, that is actually the original Los Angeles Chargers logo.
Well, it's terrible, and a lot of people picked it.
A lot of people picked it.
A lot of people picked it, including one of the guys I talked to answer your question, Seth. He goes, you know, I'm a fan. I've been a fan a long time. I said, how long? He goes, oh, about 10 years. I guess that does qualify as a long time for Chargers fans. And he said he had never gotten a tattoo before.
Oh, wow.
His first one was going to be the Shield coat of arms deal. And I said, why would you do that? And he said, it's free. And he got it on his calf.
Oh, the calf tattoo. Wow. Well, yeah. You know what? Never underestimate the power of free stuff. I've seen that all through my life. And I, even if it's permanent body modification, free if it's works. Free, a lot of people get it. Gonzo.
Wait. Before he goes, one of my favorite parts about this story, John, tell him what Johnny Hecker was offering, the punter.
Oh, yeah, even the Rams punter is scoring on these guys. That's how you know that you're in trouble when you come to town. The Rams punter was making fun of them and saying that he would pay for the tattoo removal. So if you got one yesterday, hit him up.
The punter coming after you in a big spot. Gonzo, check him out. Like I said, at underscore John Gonz. Check out his work at The Ringer. You could check him out, you know, losing to me in cornhole when the stakes go a little bit higher. All these things are in play.
Got to hang out soon, man.
Yo, before I go, real quick, big day for our boy Wes. So shouts to Wes and the Paramour.
Absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
Right.
All right, John Gonzalez. There he goes.
All right. Later, guys.
All right, bye, John.
And in case you were not aware of who John Gonzalez is,
John Ronald Gonzalez, born March 12, 1977, is an American sports writer who is married to NFL media broadcaster Colleen Wolf. John, who's a Pisces, resides in Los Angeles with his wife and two dogs.
All right, training camp spotlight time presented by New Era. And we are going to break down the preseason schedule for NFL Network coming up. The Bills at Eagles, Ravens at Dolphins, Bucks at Jaguars. Let's talk about two of these games. We'll start with the Ravens and Dolphins. And Mark, kind of maybe for one each game, one thing you're looking forward to. We'll start there.
I mean, the summer has been long. The offseason has been long. But now we are here witnessing a showdown between Jay Cutler and Ryan Mallett in the most awkward of circumstances. I believe that's football at its height in the preseason, in the realm of the preseason. What I want to see are two quick things. Yes. Jay Cutler, I know, he's in shape, he's been working out, but I want to see, suddenly, 2 weeks ago, you're probably sitting at home with your little microphone pretending to broadcast games and see how you do that. Well, that's how you do it.
Wow.
That's how you do it in the
Scorcher.
Craft. That's how you get it
done.
Is
that what you do?
Yeah, but then now, no, not anymore, and back at age 12. But now suddenly you're thrust on the field, and do you have any chemistry with Devontae Parker? Do you have any chemistry with the entire offense that you've known for like roughly 80 hours?
Yeah.
And if you're Baltimore, Ryan Mallett, if you melt down, do they finally say, we have got to do something about this position? Another terrible game, and they've got issues. We don't know when Flacco is going to truly be healthy.
It's a great point. I won't take much from the Jay Cutler outing. If he's rusty, that makes sense. If he performs well, it makes sense. He's been around forever. He knows he's been in this offense.
How long would you play him for?
Knowing...
Like two series?
Maybe. Two?
You got to get him some work. I would play him first quarter. I'd play him. Yeah. That's what I would do. But, I'm not that coach.
Feels like a soft tissue injury waiting to happen.
Yeah. But, yes, the Ryan Mallett situation is something to track. And, now they got Thad Lewis in there. But I'm sure there's still not a lot of good feelings about the situation. It all depends what's really going on behind the scenes with Joe Flacco.
Yeah, and with Ryan Mallett, part of the excuses that people were throwing out for the way that he played was that he was playing with the majority of the second team offense. So this week we'll see him with the first team offense, and he had been playing
against a first team defense. Yeah, it's like
right.
That's
so no excuses.
Those are the things that creep into this time of the year when coaches try to make excuses or players. It's like, well, I'm not getting those reps with that first team. So I'll go, yeah, when the first team defense is bearing down on you, now you're going to get the hot reads right? Let's calm down. All right, Bills-Eagles is another game. And Connie Fox, you are, of course, before you moved to Jets fandom earlier in this podcast,
sure.
You did grow up following the Eagles. Let's start with the Eagles. What are you looking forward to checking out in this game?
All right, well, I'm obviously a huge fan of Ronald Darby. I've talked about him on the show before. So I want to see if Tyrod Taylor is going to come out and target Ronald Darby and how much in this game. I know that we're not going to be able to see J-Matt, Jordan Matthews. I think that's his Twitter even.
Huh.
Because he's got the chip sternum. So we won't be able to see him. But it's interesting because we get to see these two teams that were involved in the trade. It's a Sean McDermott revenge game of the preseason, maybe.
You know, the really? Only game that really counts in terms of settling scores is the Snoopy Bowl in the Meadowlands. Let's be honest. That's when the chips are
true. That's right.
Down.
This one's pretty good, though.
It's pretty good. Yeah, this is the Bills fans, they're trying to get excited about this season. Is this the first game since the big trade?
It is, and in fact, their new GM is already annoyed that it doesn't just sit around in Florham Park where this accusation thing's around. That people say the Bills are trying to throw the season down the tubes, and he said, "No, I'm not."
Copycats.
You can't do what the Jets are already trying to do, according to some.
Never follow the Jets as a pathway for success. I would also counter with just a couple things.
Jets, like, we're throwing the season. Advice. That means 8 sacks, the most we've had since 1983 in any game. That's how you throw the NFL season.
You're going to see a lot of Zay Jones and Anquan Boldin, too.
Jonathan Williams?
Yeah.
Is he okay? Is that hammy okay?
Well, that's a fair question. They said he was fine. I wonder if maybe they keep him out of this. But
30 carries in this game?
Yeah.
30 to 35 carries.
About
still
that.
Work hard.
Why not?
That was Training Camp Spotlight presented by New Era. Speaking of New Era, New Era's NFL training collection has a great combination of innovative performance and style. With features like
fancy
UV protection. Trying to do a read here. Moisture wicking and cooling technology. There's no reason you shouldn't make the New Era NFL training collection a part of your daily attire. That's every day, Mark. NFL clothes every day for you. Available at retailers like Lids, NFLShop.com, and Dick's Sporting Goods in your favorite team.
By the way, Tamposi, I noticed more hats this week, and they've taken the Browns hat away. Very audacious move by
Tamposi. That's another power play. Another power.
I like it.
I didn't set up the hats today.
I like that. Shrug it off on an underling.
Yeah.
That's well done.
I wasn't even in here.
It does. I do sense a level of cunning that Erica possesses that will serve her quite well.
I can appreciate that.
In this position behind the glass. All right, folks. It's time to talk about a little bit of Hard Knocks.
Oh!
Yes. Episode 2 aired on Tuesday night on Home Box Office. And another interesting peek behind the curtain of the Tampa Bay Bucks. I thought not a surprise that Robbie Aguayo would be a focal point of this episode. How could it not be? And it got me thinking. I have been writing these episode recaps for this website for 6 years now. And I was trying to think the last time Hard Knocks and real news, like actual NFL news, collided. Ooh. And Hard Knocks had boots on the ground. And you have to go back, I think, to the Miami Dolphins in 2012 when Chad Johnson was arrested for his domestic violence incident and him walking into Joe Philbin's office. And in one of the indelible Hard Knocks moments for me in terms of just remembering that season and one of the seasons of all the seasons is Johnson looking around and knowing that the stationary camera was in there somewhere, and he makes eye contact with it and just like hangs his head and knows not only is his football career about to end, he's about to become the subject of a documentary series about it. So anyway, that's what it reminded me of, was Robbie Aguayo, the way they built up through the episode, some of the challenges and practices, Chris Baker. This is football. This is what this sport is, especially during training camp. I know, Mark, I think Colleen, you read it as well, Collision Low Crossers.
Yeah.
That gave a great peek behind the curtain of how brutal these teammates can be to each other during training camp before they're all on kind of like the same page once the season starts. Chris Baker barking in both Aguayo and Folk's ear from feet away. You're going to miss this. You're going to blow it. You can't take the pressure. And then on that particular day, both kickers struggled. And what jumped out to me was Folk can take it. Folk has been playing a dozen years.
Yeah.
He's heard that and worse, both in games that mattered and summer camps. Training camp. It's not like summer camp.
Summer camp.
It is on some level. They bunk up. but Aguayo, it was another symptom of his struggles, the pressure, and he couldn't handle it. And they cut to those confessionals, those one-on-ones, and he looked like he was a 15-year-old kid.
Oh, my God.
It just seemed like the moment was too big for him at this stage in his life and career, and it ended with him missing the two kicks. And then this scene when, after Dirk Koetter and Jason Light – there have been Hard Knocks episodes where you see the coach and GM agonize over a roster decision. They're in lockstep.
They knew.
They knew what they had to do, and then they have to bring in Roberto and give him the bad news.
Let's see. Well, it's never easy. I'll just get right to it. We're gonna release you. But I do want to tell you that we appreciate everything you've done for us. All right?
Thank you.
And, you know, it's just, we just got to rely on you to make those kicks.
Mm-hmm. Tough.
It went on and on and on, though. Like, that was the longest breakup scene ever. And at one point, I think it was Jason Light who said, "This is not about Roberto, the man. Keep your head up. Things can only get better from here." Like, has that ever happened that someone's broken up with you and been like, "Listen, you've hit rock bottom.
Right.
Well, this is it. But it's gonna get better."
I think if you're Jason Light and you know you're the head coach and you're the whole franchise, you have to understand that in this specific situation, trading up to take him in round two, and this is not a new theory, that you created a lot of this environment that he was put into and trying this, the idea that he'd come back this training camp and be a whole different player and kicker and person especially, I think he's got to go through what Nick Folk's gone through and heard this season after season and develop some mental toughness. I think I came away totally impressed with Robbie Aguayo, the person. I really did, because
He is going to be
fine, I think.
I felt like he was going to fall apart.
Yeah,
he seems like a tender-hearted guy.
That's what I mean.
You can't really be that, and he's going to learn that.
You can't. Yeah, I mean, the sport is not for the weak of heart, and it seemed like the moment was bigger than him at this point. And you know, I think this is a best case scenario for him on some level. Obviously, bad news would happen, losing his job, but the fact that he got another job so quickly. Both sides needed a fresh start here. It just was they needed to reboot it, and now he's just another guy in the league, just like 95% of kickers who are just playing musical chairs, and there's no more pressure on him. He's no longer the second-round pick. He's just another guy in
Chicago. Manti Te'o in New Orleans. The A storyline has been buried at this point.
It doesn't feel like there's a ton of pressure on Nick Folk either right now. He's out in a pedal boat with Ryan Fitzpatrick. I don't know if you guys saw that, but that was pretty amazing.
That's what I love about the show, is because it reminds you, is we can think, oh, we're so busy and we have kids, or we have dogs, or we have whatever it is on the side, Colleen. And like, but you have a lot of other life. I loved watching that scene of Fitzy and Folk like out on this boat stuck with these little kids jumping in pools and stuff. It was like they have to go home and do the same stuff that anyone else does.
Connie, what are some of your other takeaways from the episode?
Well, the graybeards were mentioned. I don't know if you caught that.
I did pick that up.
You were talking about Ryan Fitzpatrick. I also thought it was funny that Ryan Fitzpatrick threw shade at Mark Sanchez for eating hot dogs on the sideline during the game.
Right. And Winston had never heard of that incident.
It was a weird, like, a little parallel dimension if you're a Jet fan watching, because the paddle boats were two Jets from recent teams. And then the Sanchez incident was 2009 Sanchez rookie year, where he ate the hot dog in Oakland. So to have Ryan Fitzpatrick bringing that up and say, you gotta respect the game, bro.
Right, like, respect the game.
Fitzpatrick's very likable.
Awesome.
Very
oh my
likeable.
God, I great. Love him.
Doesn't it just seem like Ryan Fitzpatrick? I was thinking about this yesterday and watching him closely 2 years before this. Doesn't it seem he's just kind of like amused by professional football? Like, he's just kind of like, he's making jokes. He's smarter than everybody, and he knows he's not the most talented guy, and he's just. Like, when they're doing these speeches, like, you got to build the right team, you have to put the cement in the gravel.
Oh, that was the worst.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, you can just picture him just, like, smirking the whole time.
He's heard every one of these things. Yeah. I do find it odd that he pointed out that that this tray of hot dogs was specifically held in another room for doctors. I mean,
in the trainer's room,
For every team, too.
But excuse me.
It's like a thing.
Why is it that doctors, of all people, are eating, like, what is one of the worst food items around? You're eating hot dogs, the doctors specifically?
That's on your radar.
Well, it was, like, 5 in the morning, I'm watching things. I thought, what is wrong with these people?
The hot dogs are tasty. I don't care.
I'm just saying. You're a doctor. You're like, the only people allowed to have hot dogs are the doctors. It just doesn't sit right with me.
I know there's like the pig's hoof in it. And
oh, God. All right.
Among other
stuff. That's like scrapple.
Bring it to me. Bring me a little sauerkraut, a little spicy mustard.
You're good.
And we are flying. Any other thoughts from the
There's so many more. I know we can't get to them all, but I do.
How about
last
the,
thing on
the Grimes
Fitzy,
family, please.
I loved whoever said, what was it like playing against Bart Starr?
See, I found that, like, I wrote down, I said, I wrote one category was bad jokes, and that was ill humor on, I thought. It was
I
not,
kinda,
it was
I
not well
that was
done.
Funny.
I know, and I think I see this show a little, I'm realizing I need to just let go with the show a little bit.
You're a little jaded about
people
the show,
are,
strangely.
People adore this, and I get it, and so I'm loosening up a little bit on Hard Knocks. It's just been fantastic up till now.
But Miko Grimes.
She was great.
Yeah. Miko, of course, blood feud with Greg Rosenthal, our very own Greg Rosenthal,
right.
Who's on assignment today. And it did give me pause when I was writing the recap, which you can check out at NFL.com/hardknocks, that she probably would read this and maybe go after me. But I just found it. I found her comments funny, talking about how she's at every practice and every game, and sharing her thoughts about she doesn't care about little 7 5-yard slants. That bull S. I don't give an F about those catches. She just seems great.
Well, and so in the episode, and they focus on Grimes, and it's not that it's well timed, but he has a laceration on his leg.
Oof.
that somehow within seconds on her phone, she has like a close up photo of the laceration and is running around showing other players
right.
and coaches, kids, and like she just sort of I found her much more enjoyable than I thought I would have, having never really watched her or listened to her.
So we're Team Miko? Is that what we're
I liked her a lot. In
she's
fact, you know.
She's very supportive. She stays at the team hotel. She books her flight so they land
oh, yeah,
at the same
supportive.
Time.
She's engaged.
Does
she's
it,
engaged.
Does it remind anyone of Jackie and Doug Christie from Once Upon a Time in the NBA? Does that ring any bells?
Ah.
Yeah.
I mean, it
maybe?
Reminds me of past relationships that I had, like, way back in the day.
I will land when you land. You've had that situation?
These things are
oh,
out
God.
There. It's not airplanes, but.
All right. Anyway, yes. Again, check it out, NFL.com/hardknocks, and another episode next week. We'll talk about it. All right, moving on.
How did we get out of there without talking Ed Hockley?
We also.
No,
yeah,
Gerald McCoy. He's
guns,
so charming.
A lot of
okay,
good stuff.
All right.
Also, we forgot to say spoiler alert to the UK audience who don't get to see this show until Thursday. So here's a belated spoiler alert. I don't know if that's
whatever.
How great.
I mean,
I don't know if that's how they.
I
work.
Don't think that
I
works. Yeah.
Yeah, that's you went a little bit off script with
right.
the.
Well, it wasn't.
But it's in there, so that's all that matters.
You know, we love you over the other side of the pond. That was not on purpose.
Or watch it by now. How about that?
There's
yeah.
so many more things we didn't get to.
Let's close by today's show by talking about. You know, trades that make sense. Sometimes you don't have to, you know, you don't have to get, ooh, let's be fancy with the title to really hook in the listener or the viewer. No, trades that make sense.
I think
it's simple.
This was an article that I was assigned to write, and maybe what I came up with was not like hot takey enough, because
yeah.
even on NFL.com, it just said 7 logical trades.
Like,
all right, you want me to ship. I understand you yeah. want Peyton Manning to come back and take over like a Patriots team that shipped Tom Brady to the Bucks because Jameis Winston got lost at sea. I mean, I don't come up with this.
I get it, buddy. And by the way, I see also Wilk for the title. Is it title bar? What's the technology? What's the term behind the scenes? Topic bar. Potential trades that make
I mean,
sense.
To the point where this doesn't even exist. Let's not even act like any of this
that
is even
vaguely
real.
Tamp it down
real.
A little bit.
This is going to be a great segment. Who's yeah. excited for it?
All right, get us going, Mark, with a little. I know you want to talk your brownies, so let it rip.
Well, I will. There are a couple. I think that's a team that's still actively thinking we could trade certain veterans. And you look at Joe Hayden's salary. And if they could ever find a way for a team to absorb that salary, you move Joe Hayden potentially. I still think he's one of their locker room favorites. He's been a loyal guy through some really tough years. But how about the Dallas Cowboys? It's an obvious that defense needs help up and down. And Hayden, I think, has got another couple seasons where you plug him into that Dallas defense, and in return, you get another draft pick. But that division, you look at the wide receivers that Dallas is going to need to face this season in the NFC East, much less beyond, and it would be great to pick up a veteran cornerback that if Hayden is healthy, he would immediately help you and have a chance himself to go on to some playoff games, which is a rare thing in Cleveland.
I know we're not capologists, but Joe Hayden probably makes a fair amount of guap.
Well, they would need to move some things around. Like, and his contract is
unwieldy. Like move Dez Bryant off the team or something like that?
No, not. I mean, you need to move someone. Honestly, I looked at him as a potential cut in Cleveland because of his cost and what his contract is, but also just his health situation. So maybe you can get someone to take him.
And imagine him with Rod Marinelli. I mean, he would be probably even better than what he is now, just working in that system with him.
Is Joe Hayden still Joe Hayden, by the way?
No, I don't think he is. And yeah. I think that's why you potentially trade him.
All right, Colleen, what do you got?
Okay, I got Michael Kendricks, Eagles linebacker. He requested a trade. He asked the team to either trade him or release him this offseason. That obviously did not happen. He's kind of struggled to find a spot in Jim Schwartz's defense. So he wasn't on the field a lot last year, and that's sort of why his production is the way that it is. It looks from last season. Mm-hmm. He's only 26 years old. And you know where you could send him? Miami. So here's what happened. You have Raekwon.
Yeah, that was what sort of accent was that?
I thought you were doing like the Miami thing or Miami.
I have no idea. It was just something. But I'm getting excited about this because I started to nerd out about it a little bit. So Raekwon McMillan, he's out for the season now because of the torn ACL.
Sure.
And you have Michael Kendricks, who's played both strong and weak side linebacker in a 4-3. The Eagles and Dolphins have joint practices next week.
Oh, so you wouldn't even need to, you know, have a separate sort of cost or ticket.
Not even bus fare or anything.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
I like that part of it.
You really got the binder.
I know I did. I went way too far into this rabbit hole. And Michael Kendricks then would be lining up with Kiko Alonso, who they played together in Philadelphia. So it all sort of makes sense.
And they're best friends.
Except for the $4.8 million that Kendricks is getting right now.
It's funny because the Eagles like shut down his request and said no, and he barely played last season, which makes me think that he is out there as a trade bait, but they need to get the right offer, and you're waiting for that right player to go down, and Miami, they've lost a guy.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
That was good, though. You did a lot more research.
I know, and there was like way more that I didn't get into.
More than I, and I wrote the article, so.
All right, I'm going to throw one out there. I figured this out. I figured this whole thing out with the Browns.
Oh, yeah?
Because no one's ever been able to make sense of how Brock went from being the second team guy to the starter in the first preseason game, and now is he starting this week, too?
Well, there's whispers.
There's some whispers
of it, but
that it's happening.
They don't play till Monday night, so they're kind of like holding on to that.
One word, baby. One word that seems like it might be two, but it's one. Showcase.
Oh my God.
They don't want to play Brock Osweiler this season. That makes no sense for a rebuilding team. Behind the scenes, they're completely in love with DeShone Kizer now. Cody Kessler is nobody's idea of a franchise quarterback, but they probably respect him as a backup. That all makes sense. So they have another quarterback that could slide in as the number two, and you give DeShone the week one job, and away you go. So what they're doing here, what the Browns, the new regime, this brilliant regime led by the great Sashi, it's just a showcase. They want Brock to get in there on Monday night. For the love of God, just one touchdown drive. Just take him down the field.
Do something that would make you tradable.
Some slant, you know, slant pattern that gets busted for a 48-yard touchdown. Something that makes Brock Osweiler look like, oh, wait a second, now we understand why John Elway was offering $14 million a year, why the Texans were willing to go to $16 million a year, all that. And then what they're going to do, they're going to ship him over to Indy. Because guess what? Scott Tolzien ain't getting the job done, baby.
Nope.
They need a better backup plan, and Brock Osweiler is a guy that can't you just picture Brock Osweiler in a Colts uniform being bad? Can't you just picture
him? I kind of can. Here would be two counterarguments. One, his incredible salary. Need to take a look at that.
The Browns can handle that, though. They still have flexibility.
They could strike some sort of a deal where they take some of that. The other thing is, if you're going to – maybe if you really don't believe in Cody Kessler and you do believe in DeShone Kizer, but you don't want to throw DeShone Kizer into the early season part of the schedule, then you put Osweiler in there and let him play himself out of a job. Their first four games, the Steelers, the Ravens, the Colts, and the Bengals. That's a rough start for a rookie quarterback.
So you're saying there's a world where you think – the Browns
don't trust Cody Kessler as starting material.
But they need to throw somebody to the Wolves and they don't want it to be their hotshot rookie?
Yes, because I think you can ruin a rookie if he goes out and he goes 0-8 or something like that, that you believe in his potential. You don't want to throw him out in week one. And then after that 4-week stretch, you're home against the Jets. If you want to throw Kizer in then. I'm just saying that I also think that maybe it's an indication that the position coach has said over and over, Kizer has potential. He is not ready to start in the NFL. Maybe they believe that too.
Okay. Maybe.
I mean,
it's kind of morphed into Brown's analysis. I wanted to talk about the Colts side a little bit more.
Well, we get it. Telzine stinks.
I love everything about this place. I love being a Brown, and I'm just very thankful to be here.
Not for long,
though. I think it's in play, though. It's potential.
Okay. Two more quick, kind of a speed round.
Okay.
Mark,
okay.
You're up first.
How about this? With Joe Mixon looking like an absolute starting running back in Cincinnati, Jeremy Hill actually looked good in that preseason game. Talk about showcasing someone that's not a total mess. Jeremy Hill to the New York Giants, because the Giants last year, that running game was an issue, and they're not excited about Paul Perkins. That's the whispers that he's not shining in camp or anything.
Nobody's excited about him right now.
You got Shane Vereen, yeah. You got Orleans Darkwa. I think Jeremy Hill is the kind of – that NFC East is up for grabs if the Elliott suspension sticks, and even if it doesn't. And so you fix up one of your major weaknesses on offense, and you fly.
I like that one. What about you, Colleen? What do you got?
Okay, how about Philip Dorsett to the 49ers? Former first-round pick. He hasn't lived up to his expectations. Plus, you look at the wide receivers, how they're lining up right now. Chester Rogers has moved ahead of Philip Dorsett on the depth chart to the third wide receiver. Kamar Aiken might not even make the team. So they have a lot of depth there, and the 49ers obviously could use a compliment to Pierre Garçon, somebody with some speed. And Kyle Shanahan, we know what his track record is with young receivers and talent, and we saw what he did last year in Atlanta with Mo Sanu and Taylor Gabriel and Julio Jones. Obviously totally different team, but I think Kyle Shanahan would be able to make it work.
Like that.
Some young pieces.
That's straight from your article.
Well,
with a little bit more
panache.
Some things peppered in.
Miami.
I didn't rip it right off.
Can you give us another Miami before we go?
I don't even know what I said. Miami?
No, you were.
No,
you were very excited.
Miami.
Kind of like that.
There was a little. There was some sort of flavor to it, but yeah.
I don't know if I can recreate it.
all right. Thanks, guys. Good stuff. A lot of good stuff. Yes. Shout out to sweet, wonderful Chris Wessling as he goes through surgery today, and hopefully on the other side of it is getting back to us sooner rather than later. We don't know a timetable yet, but we hope Wes is back in this chair. As much as I love having Colleen next to me.
I can't wait for Wes to be back in this chair too.
That is Wes's chair, and
right
we need him here as soon as possible. So we'll keep the audience informed as that process goes along. But thanks to everyone. And remember, this is the video show, NFL.com/ATN Video, 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific. Check it out, and the archives there as well. So that's it. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, Connie Fox, Miami.
That's it, huh?
Erica Tamposi and Alex Wook behind the glass. Until Friday.